Hello everyone and welcome to the Travel and Culture Show. This week we are on our third episode of season two and I'm speaking to two people again, but this week it's on the country of Sudan, a country that I know very, very little about, so I'm excited to learn more and I will introduce our guests. So first of all we have Hanin. Would you like to introduce yourself, and then Berry, you can do that too afterwards.
Hi everyone, my name's Hanin and I'm Media Sec of Sydney Society. I study biology and I was born in England and then I moved to Sudan when I was about 3 years old, and then I lived in Sudan for 10 years and then came back here for GCSEs. And I've been here ever since.
Thank you. And Berry?
Hi everyone, my name's Abir, but I prefer being called Berry, that's my nickname, and I'm also second year. I study electronic and computer engineering at the University of Nottingham. I was actually born here as well, but I moved to Sudan when I was 10 years old, and I have lived there ever since and then came back for university.
Thank you. Now we're going to start off with a very generic question. For both of you. Hanin, you can answer first and then we'll go on to Berry. What is your favourite thing about Sudanese culture?
I've actually got quite a lot of favourite things, but I would say my most favourite thing would be the food and also like the generosity. Like everyone's so generous and there's just this, everyone's just so connected and everyone's just like a big family.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, I when I was doing my research, I did see that there was a lot of sort of emphasis on people coming together, which is definitely not something we tend to have much of in British culture. Barry, what do you think? What's your favorite?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Hanin. I think food is my number one, and then just the fact that like the whole generosity thing and the family thing. Like if you sit with another Sudanese person and just talk to them for 15 minutes, I think you'll just find out that you're like cousins or something, or like that your family knows that other person. So yeah, my number one favorite is definitely food. We've got a variety of different foods.
What's your favorite food?
My favorite, I don't know about, I have top three. I have a favorite. I think I have top three. Okay. I like this thing called gurasa, and then it's basically like a savory pancake thing. And then you have it with like, you eat with your hands and you have it with like a stew or some sort, like a saucy tomato-y thing. I can't explain, but it just tastes so good. Like it tastes so good, and we always eat it around like this time of the year, like Ramadan, because obviously it's Ramadan soon, so we always eat it like for iftar when we're breaking our fast. But yeah, my favorite food is probably that, and my second one is we've got the best desserts, to be honest. We've got this thing called basbousa. I don't know if it's even Sudanese, to be honest. Maybe it's an Arab thing, but yeah, it's like a sweet, it's basically just sugar. Like, it's just sugar. I've got a really sweet tooth, so
that sounds really good, to be fair.
Yeah, it's so good. You have it with tea. Also, my third thing is tea. Like, I think Sudanese people make the best tea, to be honest. But yeah.
It's a lot of favourites, then. Really love the food.
Yeah, I would say gurasa as well. That's my top favourite savoury Sudanese food. And sweet, I would say ligemat. It's it's like fried dough balls, kind of like puff puff, and then you have it with sugar and sometimes chocolate, sometimes cheese,
sometimes honey as well. Yeah,
that all sounds like really delicious food, to be fair.
It's so good.
What are the like ingredients that you tend to have in everything, like central ingredients? Because, I mean, in England, it seems just kind of like meat and veg, which is a bit boring, a bit bland. But is there, in Sudan, do you have any sort of staple foods that you tend to have with most meals or any type of food that's very common?
I think quite a lot of food has peanut butter in it because...
Really?
Yeah, because Sudan's like one of the top exporters for peanuts. Like, there's a lot of peanuts grown in Sudan. And it's just in everything, like in salad, in the stews, and also like in desserts and stuff as well.
Wow, I didn't even realize that. Like, I'm just realizing it now. Wow, there's actually a lot of peanut butter everywhere. I was gonna say, Sudanese people love their bread. Like, we always have to have bread with everything.
Oh yeah, definitely.
There's always bread on the side of the table. Like, just have bread. But yeah, peanut butter. Wow.
I had no idea about peanut butter. I mean, I love peanut butter, so that sounds amazing. I'm not gonna lie, that sounds really nice. Oh, that's so interesting. The last podcast, two podcasts ago, very interesting similarities with Turkish culture, because Atakan, the person I interviewed for that podcast, he said that they have bread with everything, and the more people from different cultures I speak to, the more common it is that bread is literally with everything. I just find that so funny, that it's a staple food. Now, talking more about experiences, what for both of you were the biggest culture shocks you experienced when moving from England to Sudan and then Sudan back to England?
So I'll start with Sudan back to England. No, I mean England back to Sudan. So in England, it's normal to say please and thank you for everything. But in Sudan, it doesn't exist. Like, if someone holds a door for you, if you hold a door for someone, they literally won't even say thank you. And it's not rudeness. It's just, it's not in the culture.
That's really strange. That's really interesting. I feel like, that's something that I think someone would need to be told about, because otherwise us British people would find that really rude.
Yeah, definitely. In Sudan, they didn't even get offended by it. It's not like they're expecting you to say thank you. Like, I don't know, it's kind of contradicting, really, because everyone says so nice, and then it's like, oh, but thank you, sorry, the sorry part, I think they have the sorry part, but like the thank you, please, like, it's just not there. But I was gonna say that's my biggest culture shock from moving. Like, when I was a kid, obviously in primary school, I was taught manners are so important, and then I moved to Sudan and I'm like, wait, hold on, no one's thanking me, like, what's going on here? But moving from England back to, I mean Sudan back to England, I think my biggest culture shock was like, here everyone's just out for themselves. I'm not even in a weird way, but I mean, like, in Sudan, everyone just put you first. Like, you'll just put another person first. Like, for example, if you're about to get on the bus or something, you just let everyone go in before you, or like, you let the elders go in before you. And then here, when I'm trying to get on the bus, like, everyone's standing in the line, like, old, young, disabled, no one cares. This is gonna stand in the line. This doesn't matter. But yeah, that was my biggest culture shock. I feel like in Sudan there's like a what's the word, hierarchy, I don't know, but it's just like, okay, old people, disabled people, it's just like a line of things that are most important, and then regular people, that's us, like, we matter the least. But yeah, that was my biggest culture shock coming back to England. I was like, oh my god, like, no one really cares, like this old lady, like, just let her sit down on the bus, what's going on here? But yeah, that was my biggest culture shock.
Yeah, that's quite similar to something that I was going to talk about later, but seeing as you've already mentioned it, when I was doing my research, there was this idea of honour called Sharaf, correct me if I'm wrong, which seems really, really important in Sudanese culture, and it's talking about how you respect your elders, you put your elders first. But other than that, you respect people only based on just if they're a good person or not. So instead, it's not to do with status or wealth or success. You just judge someone by whether or not they're a good person, and you respect your elders. Would you say, I mean, you've already said it is true there, would you say that it's really ingrained in Sudanese people, would you say that value is still really, really important to them?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's a traditional value, like, it's something that we have traditionally, but I think also the whole wealth thing. I feel like Sudan's been impacted by Western culture so much that now it kind of matters if you have money or not, or like it matters like what your status is more than it used to.
Yeah, social status is definitely really important, especially when it comes to marriage.
Okay, what do you mean by that? Can you go further into that in terms of marriage?
So, for example, depending on your social status, like a family wouldn't accept someone of a lower social status. And if someone's got less money, or tribal as well, like some families wouldn't accept someone from a different tribe. It's quite a big issue in Sudan.
One of our biggest flaws, tribalism.
So you don't look favourably upon the idea of people sort of staying within their tribes?
No, definitely not. Because that's one of the biggest problems in Sudan. Like, that's what's caused a lot of the wars. And then there's also a hierarchy with the tribes as well. Because there's more Arabized exactly. tribes, and then there's the, African tribes, and then the Arab tribes oppress the African tribes, and that's what's caused all the issues in Sudan.
Yeah, I agree, definitely. Plus, there's just a lot of stereotypes, like they'll say, "Oh, this tribe is known for doing this," and it's like, no,
yeah,
this tribe, and I've never done this in my life, mate. Like, what are you talking about? But yeah, I think tribalism is a very big issue in Sudan.
Yeah, there's a lot of casual racism or tribalism, actually.
Yeah, tribalism, definitely.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because that was another thing I was going to talk about, was how people in Sudan, tribes seem to be incredibly important to them in terms of where people, the communities that people belong to, and their genealogy, their ancestry. That seems a really, really important part of identity. But as you say, it seems like it's taken the negative impacts of it have sort of overtaken the positive impacts of it in modern society. And would you say that that's something that I thought about, was that more of a rural thing or an urban thing, or is it all a mix? Like, how does that play out within the society?
I think it started off as a rural thing. So obviously the tribes would be in different villages, and then they'd have conflicts over like grazing grounds or water and stuff like that. And then after people started moving to the city, those values are just ingrained with them, and then people just stick to their tribes, and that just causes issues.
Yeah. I think some people are kind of civil with it, but it's still there. Like, still the first thing you'll have, like, in the conversation, like, an older person will be like, "Oh, like, what tribe are you from?" Like, just out of curiosity, like, "What tribe are you from?" And I was kind of raised to say, like, I'm just Sudanese, like, I don't belong to a tribe, mate. But it's like, sometimes it's like, it's just part of the conversation. They just want to know, like, where you're from. They might know your family members, but sometimes it's like, "Oh, you're from this tribe, okay." And they just judge you based off of that. But yeah, it's very subjective, I think, depending on where you are in Sudan.
I find that concept, as someone who's British and only ever lived in Britain, haven't really travelled much out of Europe, I find that concept really hard to comprehend, because obviously we ask each other, you know, where are you from, but it's just sort of a city or an area, whereas in British culture, it doesn't really matter about your family so much. Do you think, did you find that, was that maybe another culture shock sometimes when you moved to Sudan, or when you moved back from England, like people's views on family and the importance of status and family?
Yeah, definitely. Like in England, it's like everyone's just equal, but then in Sudan, there's all these hierarchies, and then families, and like families are so connected, so tightly connected. Some families only stick to each other, and it's just that concept doesn't exist in England.
Are there any positives to it, though? Do you experience any positives of that of being in a tribe, or for you is it just a predominantly negative thing?
I think there are definitely some positives. Like, for example, if like if my dad knows that someone's from our same tribe, then he'd be more likely to help him, even if it's someone he doesn't even know, and then that person's like in need of financial help or anything, he'll just always help him.
Yeah, plus just the traditions, like some tribes have their own traditions. There's actually a lot of languages in Sudan. Like, I think there's like more than 50 languages in Sudan. So it's just like nice to like, you know, have like, I mean, also these people have things in common in general, but then it's like, well, your tribe, that's like even more things in common. And it's like, yeah, wedding traditions, like most tribes have like their own kind of little additions they add to like weddings. They have their own like you know, food, what's it called, not foods, like just little traditions, little bits and bobs that they add to the to their little lives. But I think in general, like Sudanese people are just basically all the same, and this tribe stuff is just a bit, it's just a bit old age now.
Yeah, but yeah, that's really interesting, because the way you've both talking about it, the way I researched it, it did seem sort of Arab tribes against African tribes, and that caused a lot of conflict. I didn't quite realize that there were also the impacts of tribes just I didn't realize there was much of a hierarchy besides that, and a conflict besides that, and how really important it was, because, you know, I thought maybe that as different generations come through, maybe the importance would have diminished. Do you think it will diminish? Do you think as new generations come through, they'll understand the issues that come with the tribes and tribalism? Do you think there'll ever be a change?
Yeah, definitely. Like, just as Barry said earlier, like, her parents taught her to say that she's just Sudanese. So a lot of Sudanese people are like that now. They wouldn't ask you about your tribe, unless it's someone from the older generation. But our generation, not as much. Like, they don't really care as much about tribes.
True. I think it can get very political as well. Like, obviously, it all goes back to, like, colonization and all of that stuff. So I think it's just all a political factor. And I think, yeah, that's slowly changing.
So, yeah, so you think people are trying to sort of move on from that and just become more connected, despite where they're from?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I think as people see the impacts of it now, like the genocide in the West that was caused by tribalism, and so many issues, like the divide between the South and North, that was also tribalism.
Yeah, there's a big change happening. I think how do you if you talk to people from Britain about these issues and the tribalism, do they have a similar reaction to me? And not even just from Britain, I mean from anywhere else, do they have the same reaction of me as not quite understanding the issues that come with it? Or is that just...
Yeah, I definitely think like it's not an easy topic to explain, but yeah, definitely the same reaction as you. And you know what, like just adding to the whole positive spot, I think like when we come to places like England and like people like leave Sudan, the tribalism topic is just off their heads. Like it doesn't matter what tribe you're from, like people, like for example, like the Sudanese community in the UK, like everyone is just family, because obviously there's not many of us, so we just choose to stick together no matter what tribe you're from or like where you're from. So like that doesn't matter, as long as you're Sudanese, it's like, oh okay, like that's our common ground, like we don't really care past that. But yeah, that's one of the positives of, I mean that's one of the changes when you leave Sudan.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I suppose this in a way kind of links in, we were talking about experiences, but do you think you would ever move back to Sudan after uni or whenever, whatever time? Do you think you'd ever want to move back there?
Yeah, definitely. Depending on how things go in Sudan, like if the economy improves, because obviously I wouldn't want to like live my life there and have children, everything, if the economy doesn't improve. But if it does, then I definitely want to go back there, because I feel like it was a really good experience being growing up in Sudan. Like it just exposed me to so many things, and I feel like I wouldn't be the person I am right now if I didn't grow up in Sudan.
What did it teach you? What things did you take away from living in Sudan?
So it's just like you just get exposed to a lot of different people, and then you take things, you just don't take things for granted as much, because you see how like some people, they're not like how misfortunate they are, and there's a lot of inequalities in Sudan, and you're just exposed to so many different people.
Yeah, and Barry, what would you think? Do you think you'd ever want to move back there?
I think, yeah, Sudan's definitely the end goal. Like, I feel like I'm kind of like I feel like my parents brought me here to like learn, educate myself, all of that, and I'm kind of responsible to go to back to Sudan, like kind of fix it a bit, if that makes sense. But I agree with everything Hanin said. I think I learned a lot of values in Sudan that I don't think I'd learn here, mainly because here it's a good thing, like everyone's equal, but in Sudan you kind of see like people struggling on the streets, and like, you just see a range of different like classes or like types of people, like you see it all, to be honest. And I think, yeah, that really humbles someone, a person.
Yeah, I can understand your point of view on that. And obviously you said you're thinking about how, you know, end goal moving back there. When you did live there, you lived in the capital, Khartoum. I'm sorry if I've pronounced that wrongly. How does city life compare to that, to living there, compared to living in Britain?
I feel like living in Britain, everything's just a lot more convenient. So even though Khartoum's a city, there's a lot of issues. Like, there's always power cuts, there's long queues to get everything. Like, if you want to buy bread, if you want to buy petrol, there's just so many inconveniences.
Yeah, I agree with Henny. And even though Khartoum's like the capital and it's supposed to like have everything in it. I don't know. I have never actually lived in I haven't lived in London, for example. So like in comparison to Nottingham, I feel like Nottingham's very quiet. It's very everything's accessible, even though it's not really the main city. Whereas Khartoum is like things are kind of like far. It's really hot. It's always busy. It's like a city, like I think it relates more to like London than it does to Nottingham.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I asked that question because personally I've never really lived in a city. The closest thing to a city I've lived to is Nottingham, and I visited London and they do seem very different, so it's interesting to understand differences in city life.
Yeah.
And do you think that you prefer living in Nottingham in a slightly smaller place, or do you think you just that you'll enjoy more, because obviously you said you'd like to go back to Sudan, do you think you prefer living in a big city there, or do you think you'd rather live in the countryside out there?
Oh, no, definitely not countryside, just because it's so like so difficult to get anything in the countryside. Yeah, but sure. I did like living in Sudan, although it's really hard to get around in Khartoum because it's so busy. Like, even if it's somewhere that's only 10 miles away, it might take you an hour to get there because of the traffic. So it's just a lot easier to get around here in Nottingham or in London.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Hanin. Anyway, it's just like massive land with just so much sand, like it's just the desert really. So it's like there's no shops, there's no gas stations to like stop, and like, you know how like on the motorway you can just stop and get, no, we don't have that there. It's the countryside.
That's interesting to learn how city life and country life differ between the two places. If someone were to visit Sudan, say you go to the capital, what would you recommend they do there and why? So if they've never been before, just to really experience things.
I would say to go on a boat on the Nile, because it's just so nice and it's really like right by the Nile, there's Nile Street, and that's where like the main city attraction is. It's like really busy, so many shops. It's just really nice to sit by the Nile and just have tea and legemat, which is that thing I explained earlier, the fried dough balls.
Yeah, Nile Street is definitely the place to be. There's also like a lot of like restaurants and like fish restaurants, and sometimes people are fishing there. Also, I don't know if you know about this, but people eat like it's called Tin Bahar, so it's like Tin Bahar. What's that? How do I translate that? It's like mud from the sea. Yeah, have you ever had of it?
I haven't.
I think it's a I don't think it's a Sydney's thing.
I've actually never heard of it.
Really?
It's
a very, like, a lot of people have it in their culture.
Like mud, like
mud, like actual mud, like. Okay, so Congolese people have it too. It's called Mabele in Congolese. Sorry if I'm saying that wrong. Kalaba in Cameroon. Maybe it's an African thing. Nzu in Igbo, so in Nigerian. Yeah, but it's like I saw it on TikTok the other day, and people actually eat mud. Like, my mum used to eat it, and I used to be like, "Mum, what are you doing? Like, that's so disgusting. You're just picking it off the floor." And she's like, "This is the purest type of mud, and it's so sweet. Like, try it." And I was like, "No, I'm not doing that." But yeah, a lot of people go to the Nile. Like, there's a specific spot in the Nile where you can just like break it off from next to the Nile, and it's really clean, and you just eat it, and it's like,
oh my god,
sweet. Apparently, I've never done it, but yeah. I think that's
probably
a good experience.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
No, I mean, definitely ask like your mum or something. Like, she definitely know about Tin Bahar. But yeah, I think either going to the Nile to eat mud, or that just sounds wrong.
Yeah, the way you say it now.
but if you want to leave Khartoum, I think go to we have a safari park actually. It's called Safari
Park. Dindir?
Yeah, Dindir Safari Park. So I was actually supposed to go last year, but COVID. But like, it's, you just drive through, and there's like animals, like there's actual animals, like it's an actual safari in Sudan, which is so crazy to me because I didn't think Sudan was capable of like looking after animals. But it's like giraffes and elephants and lions and leopards, and it's just so nice. But yeah, definitely go to that safari park. What else do we have in Sudan?
I saw the Red Sea. When I was doing my research, just saying how there's you can like dive off like dive into the Red Sea, and there are corals and stuff, and
yeah, that's like called Port Sudan, so that's like north of Sudan, like next to Egypt, like just below Egypt, and like on the east, so it's like a boat away from like Saudi Arabia and all those countries. But like, yeah, it's so pretty. The sea is so clean there. Yeah, so it's got a beautiful coral reef, and the city itself is actually really nice. And you can get a plane from Khartoum to Port Sudan. I think that's the only city with like an airport. I'm not sure, but with like another airport. But anyways, yeah, Port Sudan is definitely the place. But obviously in Khartoum, like, it's not that accessible. And it's only nice to go in the winter time, to be honest, because it's really hot in Sudan anyways. So Port Sudan is definitely a Christmas vacation.
Yeah, because it gets so humid when it's hot.
Yeah.
But it sounds like there's a lot to do there. There's a lot to experience.
Definitely.
And there's something else that I want to touch upon is, with a lot of people I've spoken to, they say the best way to really understand and experience the culture is through getting to know the locals and speak to the locals and just spend time with people. Would you say that's the same thing in
100%
in Sudan?
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, locals. I think I like, whenever I want to do something, like, let's say I want to go to like the market and I want to like buy something, I always like speak to the locals. I'm like, is this the real price? Also, another thing, a culture shock from going here and from here to Sudan is people negotiate prices. Like, there's no fixed price. Like, if I'm going to the market and I want to buy like a kilogram of bananas, I'm negotiating a price, and it's like, why don't you have a fixed price on these things? But yeah, like when I first went, my mum, not my mum, but like people who aren't used to certain, they always get like kind of scammed, so they just pay more.
Yeah.
And a local would come and be like, why did you pay that much? Like, he scammed you. But yeah, definitely speak to the locals. I think you try and plus the locals are so nice as well, like they're always willing to help out. With a fee, of course, but you know, it's all right. It's all good intentions.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, I've been given the same advice before for other places. Always speak to the locals, especially when at the markets. Make sure you get a good price. Yeah, I can imagine that's a culture shock for anyone who's not come from anywhere where you sort of haggle for goods and try and get a decent price.
Yeah,
that's really cool. I haven't got any more questions, but is there anything else that you'd like to add? Because, I mean, that's been a very interesting chat. Is there anything else that you think is really important to talk about or that you just really like talking about Sudanese culture?
I actually wanted to add something earlier about bread, but crazy thing is, bread is so important in Sudan that in like 2018 there was like a lack of bread, like nobody could get bread anywhere, and like protests started, like people started protesting, and then that led on to like people protesting about petrol, and then protesting about deaths, and then led on to like the Sudanese revolution. But like, it's crazy that it all started off with bread. Like, that's
literally,
that's just like, that's how important bread is in Sudanese culture. Like, I didn't want to downplay it, but bread is actually so important. Like, people actually can't live without bread. It's crazy. But yeah, I don't know if you know much about the Sudanese revolution.
I don't. I was doing some research and I was focusing more on sort of customs and tradition.
Yeah, that's it's very political, but yeah, I think the main custom that led to that was bread, and I think that's very interesting actually. Like, bread is so important to us that we had to like fight the government about it.
That is, that's not something that I personally can even comprehend. That's crazy the way you say it, but I guess that it just shows how different cultures and countries are, and how important things that we often take for granted, especially in Britain. I think we take practically everything for granted, and then you learn about somewhere else and you think, oh wow, that it's just so different and so important as well.
I actually, when I came to England, like, I started appreciating like small things like Red Bull more. Like, I look at Red Bull and I go, I appreciate you so much. Like, it's so hard to get a hold of you in Sudan. I need the energy, and I look at my Red Bull and I'm like, yeah, I'm not gonna miss this. I'm just gonna keep it. And I just think of, yeah, what would I do in Sudan?
Yeah, like all these things, even like normal things like shampoo, conditioner, like different brands of toothpaste, you just can't find them in Sudan. So every time we'd go back to Sudan, we'd take suitcases full of stuff from here.
Yeah, you can find it in Sudan, but it's just like stupid prices, and it's like,
yeah, so expensive.
Yeah, so I just like, I've learned to appreciate a lot more, I think.
Yeah, that's a very interesting thought to end on. That is something that I did not come across in my research, but definitely food for thought. Thank you both for coming on to this podcast. It's been really, really fascinating.
Thank you so much for having us.
You're very welcome.
I feel like this is our last thing we're going to do as the Sydney Society of this year, like as the Sydney Society Committee of this year. So yeah, this is this is very nice. I enjoyed it a lot.
Well, I feel very privileged to both you have on here talking so honestly about your culture and Sudan, because it's easy to only talk about the things that you like, whereas I think it's important to try and be more well-rounded in discussions. So thank you very much. And to all the listeners, I really hope you enjoyed that show. I think we have one more coming this series. But thank you all for listening, and I hope you all have a lovely day.